You are listening to episode 155 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Adventures in Retail.
Episode 155 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September the 14th, 2014. Almost got that out without a flaw. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my Levi-wearing brothers, James Furlough.
Sure. I wear Levi's.
Well, this is sort of a... I know you're not... You're not living here, so maybe it's not as big of a deal for you. But it's like Levi's are all the rage right now because the Levi Stadium, where the 49ers are currently barely beating the Chicago Bears with our beloved Jared Allen, is Levi Stadium. And this is great. Basically, I wanted to go Niners, but, like, you know, since we're not a sports show. Yeah.
I did not know it was called Levi Stadium. So.
What? Really? Yeah. It's crazy, yeah. Man. It's so funny because I was like, I walked into the Levi store, and because we have a couple around here, and like Levi dedicated, everything super expensive. And I walked in and I saw a 49ers, like a nice, like a gold denim 49ers shirt. And I was like, that's really awesome. They're like doing an NFL promotion. And then, like, I was out of the store when it occurred to me, no, it's not an NFL promotion. That's definitely they spent $200 million in order to put a giant Levi, you know, tag on the stadium. And they're now big old time partners with the Niners. So I got to go spend a ridiculous amount of money on a jacket that's going to be the color gold. It's actually not a really ridiculous amount for a jacket. It's just a ridiculous amount for a gold jacket.
Fair enough. Yeah, now that I think about it, I don't think I actually wear Levi. I think I'm more of a Wrangler. Ooh. What does Walmart sell?
That's Wranglers. What I see. I'm classy, man. I go to Macy's. I wear Levi's.
Okay.
Actually, I like the fit of and materials of Levi's because they make everything, right? I mean, they make Dockers. I'm a big fan of Levi's as a company. We talked about that on the show. We must have. I know we have because we talk basically every time we talk about, you know, Facebook diversifying their brand. We bring up the whole idea of Levi's starting the Dockers brand because nobody would buy khakis from a jeans company, and so they changed the brand and people bought a ton because they're awesome pants. That's how they roll. Were you weren't watching any football today?
No, I was at a man camp this weekend, which was a camp. We went camping essentially with a bunch of guys from my church. There were 25 of us there. It was good. We had speakers. We talked about how to engage in the word, engage with our wives, engage in the world. And we played some games. We hung out, ate food. And then I came home and did yard work because I don't know how to sit still, apparently. So that was pretty much what I did today.
Not much football. That sounds almost exactly like what I did. It's not exactly at all what I did. This was a weird weekend for me. It was our sister's 24th birthday, our grandma's 80-something birthday.
And, that was this weekend, huh?
Yeah, and then there was a graduation party in the middle of it. So I basically spent like all weekend hanging out and DDing a bunch of girls like all over the valley and going to bars and just being super catty and making fun of other girls' clothes and stuff. It was kind of weird, but it was rather enjoyable, especially since I wasn't the subject of derision. I was just party to it. It was weird, but it was a different pace of a weekend for me, but it was rather enjoyable. So, you know,
cool.
Whatever, it's how it rolls. But you know what, James? We're not here to talk about football and girls and camping. We are here this week, like every week, to talk about the iPhone. So without further No, I mean, and by the
probably
iPhone.
True.
Yeah, right. We're here to talk about technology and the continuing corporate offer. There's a lot of things that went on this this week, James, like Apple Pay and Apple Watch and things of that sort. So we're going to talk about that and the corporate opera, and by that we mean the soap operas, the soap opera of corporations dealings back and forth. I'm going to have a rough time tonight. The people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yeah, I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
All right. That's awesome. And they didn't really do anything this week, which is
probably... They bought a company.
Okay, that's something. You know what? That is something. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Eucalyptus.
Yeah. That's right. They did. What does Eucalyptus do again? Is that my is that my article, or is that
it's cloud stuff?
Yeah. No, nobody knows. It's a known unknown. it's unknowable what they do. Yeah. So if you want to follow us throughout the week, and this is really dumb. I'm going to have to change everything. We're all over social media. Sort of. I used to be. I'm not so much anymore because I upgraded, and by that I mean downgraded, and so I'm going to try to keep up with the Instagram as best I can. My tag there is NextWiggin4. If you want to follow me, if you want to play Destiny with me, my PlayStation 4 gamer tag, PlayStation Network, also NextWiggin number 4, and then my Twitter, which is still working, I think. Matthew D. Furlow at Matthew D. Furlow. So check it out.
I'm so excited to hear that story. Cool. I am James Furlow with an at sign before, with a .com after, or all by itself, depending on the service.
I like it. If you want to see more about the show, we talk about all sorts of cool stuff. We got clicks and links to all of our articles that we talk about. We talk about any videos, sound bites. We've got a podcast. We've got a YouTube channel. We got all sorts of stuff. We've got beautiful graphics, well laid out internet web pages. You can find all of that at furloughbros.com. Check it out. Tell a friend. Tell your grandma. Tell everybody.
I was open on my email because I want to find an email for a conversation we're going to have here. And it turns out I just got a, ready for this?
Yes.
Friend feed update. Apparently someone subscribed to my friend feed.
Nice. What's your friend feed tag?
That's like, it's old. I thought it was shut down. Facebook bought it.
Right?
Shut it down.
That exists. That's still a thing.
I didn't think it was. So there you go.
That's funny.
Weird. Anyways, that was weird. Totally random.
Weird. That's the deal.
That's the deal.
I think you're up first, man.
Oh, okay. There we go. That's the link I wanted. So we're not going to talk about the iPhone first. Instead, we will talk about decidedly older technology.
Yeah.
The TI-84 Plus.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, where the heck did my mouse go? Boy, I'm really struggling too. All right. So apparently, the TI-84 Plus is still in use today.
I believe it.
And what's crazy about it is, you know, they show pictures of, like, here's what it looked like in 2001, here's what it looks like today. For the most part, pretty much exactly the same. It has 480 kilobytes of random access memory. It's got 24 kilobytes of RAM. Kilobytes, let's be clear.
Yeah.
Its black and white screen is a paltry 96 by 64 pixels.
Wow.
And for the last 10 years, it's sold for about $150.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow.
Yep, and it is by far the best-selling calculator there is.
You know, it's funny. I mean, its real selling point is the fact that it has 480 kilobytes of ROM and 24 kilobytes of RAM. And no Wi-Fi, no Bluetooth, no USB. And the TI-80, the TI-83 and the TI-84 Plus are the right.
Those TI-83 was amazing.
Right. You're like your base. It's a weird world that we've created here, right? Because it's like everybody, you know, back in the middle school days, you're learning about the calculator, the computer that you can carry around with you in your pocket that will do all of this stupid math homework for you. Just as a cheat system, they tell you you can't do that, and the justification was always you're not always going to have a calculator with you. So you need to learn how to do the math yourself so you can do it on your own. Turns out we all carry math calculators with us all the time, constantly, constantly. That's the word I'm going to stick with. And it's funny, I showed this off to – this came up in a random conversation. I'm holding up my phone, my iPhone, one of my phones, to the screen. You can barely see it. But if you look at my dock tray, not only do I have this stock Apple – calculator. I also have a graphing calculator. That's how you know you're an engineer. When one calculator in your tray isn't good enough, you need two. That's how I live. It's an interesting world because it's like I understand why, you know, the whole idea is if the calculator is too smart, why would you ever need to do, it'll do the math for you. And so a graphing calculator will take care of the more base functions like graphing and, you know, some of the math that's actually really difficult to do by hand, like calculating angles and sines and cosines and some matrix math and stuff. But it's, you know, it's more or less, it does just enough of the heavy lifting to allow you to prove that you know how to do the higher conceptual stuff. And basically they allow you to do, you know, they allow you to do all the heavy lifting of calculus without actually doing any of the calculus for you. Whereas anything smarter than that will do calculus for you. And then what's the point? But what's weird is we literally, like, even middle schoolers carry around devices that can easily do symbolic math calculators that can do calculus for you. And, you know, and it really does beg a question of what's more important. Is it learning the math or learning how to use the device that does the math? You know, because I in the analogy I would draw is what's more important, learning how to make a car that runs or learning how to drive a car? You know, and would we be better off teaching people how to use a computer that can do calculus for you because we all have them with us all the time? Or would we be better off teaching you how to do calculus by hand? Teach everybody how to do calculus by hand, or just teach a small select group of kids who want to learn, who can learn, who can excel there, how to do it, and teach everybody else how to do it with a calculator. I don't know. What's better? I'm sure Texas Instruments is not a fan of everybody learning how to do it on their phone, because they will sell dramatically fewer $150 calculators that must only cost them 10 cents to manufacture at this point.
It's only $15 to $20.
It's $15 to $20 in components? That seems absurd.
They're the only ones who need that anymore.
Oh, that's a good point. That is a good point. I guess you really do have to handle all the manufacturing yourself. I mean, computer chips and stuff. But it's Texas Instruments. They make computer chips. Like, you'd think they'd have to... Whatever.
That's an interesting point that you bring up. And I've often thought about that too. I mean, at a minimum, someone has to learn how to do it. Because you do need people to, you know, to use your analogy, to make cars, to do engineering.
Yeah, right.
And that requires you... there's value in knowing how to do the math. Sure. One of the reasons why I'm successful in my job is because I can do algebra. And, you know, because people will present me, you know, with a problem, and a lot of times they'll say, well, you got to use Solver to do it because that's the only way you can make this work. And I'll go, well, no. Right. We can solve for the variable and then make it dynamically adjustable and, you know, do other cool stuff with it. And, you know, and there's a lot of people where that just baffles them, you know, and there's more times than not where I'll hit up a whiteboard or get a sheet of paper and start moving variables around and making it work and proving, you know, taking complex problems and equations and simplifying them down to the most simplified point and saying, okay, here's how this is going to work. And, you know, so suddenly my spreadsheets are smaller and they're more dynamic and, you know, all that stuff. That's one of the reasons one of my tools went from taking a week to get an answer to I could do it for you on the spot.
That's impressive.
15 seconds type thing. How long did it take you to type into the cell? Whereas before they had a huge engine that would have to run it all and, you know, do the math. And so there's value in being able to understand that. You know, I was writing some code for this one time for some data stuff that we were doing, and I had these two tables and I needed to transform one of them, and I finally sat there and I was like, you know what? I know how to do this. It's you use matrix math. Well, that's how you get this done. And so I wrote out the code to essentially do matrix math on it, you know, and I had my eigenvalues and I was making transformations and you know, and
eigenvalues. That's the greatest name for a value ever, BT dubs.
Yeah. And I remember I hated that class too. And you know, and here I was using it to do something where again it was what they had done originally was this huge, long, complicated equation to get it done, and I went, no, just matrix algebra, linear algebra. This is a lot easier, trust
me.
Come
on, guys. Yeah.
And, you know, and so, you know, did that. So I think there's definitely value in it. Does everybody have to do it? Do they have to do it to the extent that they do it to? You know, is it good enough just to understand how it works, or do you actually have to memorize it?
Yeah.
You know, those are...
I think there's a trade-off. I think there's value in knowing how to do, you know, being good at adding, subtracting, dividing, and all the other basic operations. You know, I don't think we should completely supplant those with... Actually, it's funny. I would actually rather people learn calculus than learn how to add, to be totally honest. Like, I would rather people be good at you know, geometry and figuring out how to, you know, understanding how geometry works and being able to do that by hand as opposed to being able to do multiplication. Because computers are very, very good at basic operations, and you will always have a calculator with you. But, you know, whereas it's funny, so when my job, you know, I don't use much calculus in my job, and I don't use much matrix math in my job. I use some, but what I use extensively is geometry, and it's one of those things where it's like, and you know, oftentimes it's a lot of people will want a, you know, you'll when you're doing modeling and stuff and you're trying to build these really complicated objects and make sure everything works out where it lands where it's supposed to look and looks beautiful, like, how do you do that? Well, a lot of times you have to describe these things with geometric functions in a program that's not necessarily designed to do that. And being able to figure that out, what that's supposed to look like, yeah, I mean, that is where I really separate myself from a lot of other engineers because I'm very good at ninth grade geometry, you know, I wonder about that, where it's like, you know, that it's that same, you know, like you said, there's definitely value in being good in way, you know, and learning how to do it. And I'm a big advocate of the idea that people should learn how to program at a young age. And is it worth anything to know how to program if you're not any good at math? I don't know. I remember I took one of my first programming classes. We had to do a physics problem, and it was really difficult for a lot of kids because they didn't understand the relationship between doing stepwise functions where you calculate, you know, you basically do the derivative by hand versus actually deriving the equation, you know, and so even though it was an incredibly simple problem, if you understood the physics and the math, I don't know. And so there's this value there in these simple computers. But I don't know.
There's another, education theory, I guess, that flows around, and it's I think I've talked about it on the show before, but it's just-in-time education versus just-in-case education or learning. And we do just-in-time a lot. You know, that's studying for before a test comes up, right? You're learning information for the purpose of a test. Or you've got some sort of problem at work and you've got to figure out, you know, a new code language or whatever, you know, how to use a tool in order to do that job. There's a lot of that. And then there's the just-in-case component of it. You know, these are things where you thought it would be fun to learn how to woodwork, and so you took a woodworking class. Or you thought it would be fun to write some short stories, so you wrote a short story or something. You know, you didn't have necessarily a specific problem or test or task that you needed it for. You just were like, oh, this would be cool, you know, whatever. And what happens a lot is these just-in-case skills, they present solutions to problems that others wouldn't have seen.
Right.
You know, I remember we had this happen to us where it was, man, I feel like this was like 3 years ago now, when you and Dad came up and were working on one of our rentals. I remember we were doing the flooring thing, and there were two different levels.
Yeah.
And we were looking at it going, I don't know how to bridge this gap. And I remember sitting there, we were both on our hands and knees looking at it, trying to figure it out. We didn't have a solution. And we both looked at each other and we're like, we know the second we ask our dad, he's going to look at it for like 5 seconds and go, oh, okay, I know how to do that.
Right.
And then go do it. And that's exactly what happened. But what was interesting is that his solution for doing it required the skill on the saw being able to cut a very long wedge that I didn't have the skill set to make that cut.
Right.
And neither did you. And so that wasn't even an option for us. Whereas for him, because he had learned that skill, it might have been he had to, you know, otherwise, but because he had that skill set just kind of sitting in the background, it presented a solution for him.
Right.
And he got it done, and it worked awesome. And so there's value of saying, maybe you should learn math just in case someday it becomes valuable.
Which is the real reason we do it. It's because it's, you know, it actually is one of the reasons why we have as many engineers as we have, is because we educate so many people in math. Everybody that has any propensity towards it is going to learn the basics and be able to excel later. You know, and there's value in it. There's definitely value in it. I know there's also – it's also interesting – I don't know. There's a big political debate going on right now with the whole what's that new education system called? It's –
I don't know. My wife doesn't teach anymore. I don't have to care.
Right. It's – what's it called? It's something. It doesn't matter. But they're – one of the things that they're doing is they're rethinking how to teach math, and they're trying to – it's like they've moved away from forcing people to memorize multiplication tables. And I'm always like, I was looking back and I was like, I don't remember memorizing multiplication tables, because for me, I learned how to multiply. And if you know how to multiply, there's no such thing as memorizing a multiplication table. They self-solve. The same thing every time. Now, I do remember being in eighth grade. I have this very, very distinct memory of being in eighth grade, advanced algebra. A lot of really smart people in the class. I was one of the top grades, so I'm probably top five in a class of 25, right? And we had a thing where it was just sort of gave everybody a chance to check out how good they were, and it was like 300 multiplication questions, and they were all very simple, 12 and under, two numbers, 12 and under, multiplying together, and you basically just had in random order, and you basically had to fill out the sheet as fast as you can.
Yep.
And then everybody was timed, and you all had 5 minutes. And I was like one of four students that didn't finish the worksheet in 5 minutes, because I multiplied everything. I actually had to do the math for everything, whereas other kids and kids that were doing much worse than me in the class still had all those things memorized. And so they were able to just write it out as, you know, I don't know what the best way to teach math is, but I feel like that was a bad way to teach math. But, you know, because I, you know, it, it, it was I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. It's a weird world. So that was actually way more interesting than my first article, which isn't really an article, but it's just an announcement that Destiny came out this week. I had like a number of countdown timers on Tuesday. Tuesday was a big day for me. It's awesome, man. It was so cool. There was like a countdown timer at midnight, and I was up super late programming, and then I got on, and I gotta be honest, James.
Was it fun?
It's tremendously fun, and B, graphics are incredible. I mean, they're just like out of control. It's ridiculous how detailed and stuff these things are. Like, I can't even believe it sometimes. Like, it's craziness. And
what's your favorite part about the game?
Oh, so the game basic premise is like there's aliens that you have to kill, right? And when you're picking your guys, there's like three different. It's kind of it's more of an adventure game. Did you ever play Diablo?
No.
Okay. Well, so there's like the MMORPG style game, right, where you're a person and you get to develop a character and go down particular, you know,
like Second Life.
And it's common in RPGs. I'm just gonna move along. that you have like a particular class where you have a natural propensity of like you either really you got a lot of armor but you're slow, or you don't have much armor but you're fast, or you're good at like magic or whatever. Well, this game has three classes that happen to fit those categories, and I picked one of the like the heavier slower guy who's just got like big guns and stuff. And I've got this
tank.
Yeah, exactly, the tank character. And I got this big old gun. It's a revolver. It's got six rounds in it. And I jump onto my like little speeder bike, because you can get little speed, you can call speeder bikes in. And we'll be like scooting around all over the place. I'm playing
with,
yeah, see, this is the best part, is it's all over the interwebs. So you're playing with your buddies. I got a couple of friends from college and one of my cousins, and we all play. And so you're doing a mission with him, and you're like scooting down the down the road. And what's crazy is because it's all online and there's just a bunch of people, what they'll do is they'll have Earth, and you and your buddy are playing, and then there'll be like random people from wherever that'll be playing on your map at the same time. And so even though you're going from the bottom right corner to the top left corner, and they're going from the bottom left corner to the top right corner, you and this random other couple of players will intersect paths at the same time, and there just so happens to be a huge old army. So there's like, you'll be flying along, and all of a sudden you'll see like this battle going down. And so Timmy, being one of the lighter long range guys, he'll jump off his bike and he'll start attacking from afar, and I'll just like scoot up as fast as I can right into the thick of the battle. I mean, it's just like there's bombs going off everywhere. I'll like jump off my scooter and just smash somebody in the face and then start firing off my. It's like, it's so much fun. Like,
wow,
this is great.
Sounds like D&D. Sounds cool.
It's a little more action packed than that, but it's gotcha. one of the great. I mean, it is, but it's also similar. And I was describing it to somebody this weekend, and I said, I feel kind of dorky because I'm playing a video game late at night, whatever. But it's like, the reality is we're all sitting there chatting about life and work and whatever, and you're hanging out with your friends. It's sort of like playing a board game, but over the internet and not in person and with incredibly high end graphics, and you're killing aliens. You know, it's just like a board game. But that social interaction of it is very similar, and that's the reason why I bought it. And cool. it's a great little game
recommend it.
I do recommend it. And like I said, if you're listening to this show and you have a PlayStation 4 and you have Destiny, gamer tag me. Let's go kill some aliens. but it's
cool.
It's a good little deal that they got going on.
I do miss video games, I'll be honest. I was thinking about it this weekend. My wife's out of town through Wednesday, and I was like, man, it'd be fun to play some video games. She's not around. Then I went, never mind.
It would be fun. Yeah. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the video games. They're expensive, but they're, it's good times. I did have this really weird, experience, though. So one of the cool things that happens with the PlayStation is it's got an audio jack built into the wireless controller. So you can plug in with your mic headphones into it, which I thought was great because I was like, I've got all these mic headphones nowadays and I can just plug it in. But I've also got a really nice sound system, so if I don't need a mic, I'm going to play over the nice sound system. Well, turns out, since this is obviously an online game, you want to use your mic headphones. I plug it in. I plug in my first headphones, and nothing goes over the audio. And I was just like, "Why? Wait, what's going on here?" And I try again and mess around with it a little bit. Turns out there are two competing standards for how headphone jacks work. They've got like four little rings on them. They have left speaker, right speaker, mic, and ground, are your four different pins that you need. And there is the old Nokia standard, which went left speaker, right speaker, ground, mic, which had become the worldwide standard and was everybody was kind of going along with it, including Sony. When they were making older PlayStations and making sound compatible stuff and the original PlayStation Vita, things like this, things along those lines. That was what they were doing. Well, and then along came this company who decided to make a smartphone, and they like to try to force you to buy their peripherals, and they use clever different ways to do that. So this company, Apple, decided to launch the iPhone, and instead of going with the Nokia standard of headphone jack, they went with a more obscure, less used standard, which reverses the mic and the ground pins. Now, because of how it works, and it just so happens that the audio will still work, just the mic won't. So if you wanted your iPhone to work, you had to get an iPhone-compatible pair of headphones. Now, it just so happened that the iPhone started to do well and kind of became the and everybody was using earbuds and stuff, and they wanted to be able to plug their phones in. So very rapidly, a lot of the phone companies who had been using the Nokia standard, and as Nokia was collapsing under its own weight, they started to go with make their phones compatible with Apple earbuds. And so this standard started to become the more and more common standard. Then Beats can, follows form, then Skullcandy follow form, then pretty much everybody's doing that. But Sony had two different departments. They had the phone department, which was following what everybody else was doing. But then they had the PlayStation department, which had all this legacy accessories. And trying to be nice to their legacy accessories people, kept with the old standard. So now it is almost impossible to find a stupid pair of earbuds that'll work with your headphone, with the PlayStation, that's not a PlayStation Vita branded or PlayStation branded headphones. So thankfully the PlayStation headphones are rather cheap. They're like $15 on Amazon, so it wasn't too big of an annoyance. But it's weird when you talk about just-in-time education versus what's the other form? Just-in-case education. This is definitely a case of just-in-time education, and I doubt I will ever use my rather now archaic knowledge of how speakerphones or headphones work. I am going to make an adapter.
That's what you think.
Yeah, right. Well, it's because now I know. Now the dork in me wants to. I've got all the soldering stuff, so I bought two female and a male jack. So I'm going to make an adapter that just switches the wires and see if I can't get all of my cool headphones to work, and then I can even return the $15 headphones and have it all just work beautifully. Because I'd like the ones I'm wearing right now. I'd really like these to work. That would be awesome. Because they're the most comfortable, expensive headphones I own. And, utilize them as much as possible. But, yeah, it's weird. It's weird what you learn when you have to, make stuff work. So, anywho, so Apple had an announcement that same day.
Yes, they did.
A couple hours later, Destiny launched. 10 hours later, Apple made an announcement. And, for starters, did you try to follow the live broadcast of
yep
of the event? How'd that go
Flawless.
For you? Flawless.
Totally fine. Flawless.
Yeah.
Except for... At one time, I think they were like, it was dubbed with Chinese on top of it. Did you hear that one?
I did hear that one.
And I was like, huh, that's weird. And then it did stop, and I hit refresh like 20 times. And then finally, I landed on a stream where it was like broken HTML, but it had a small player, and it played. So I watched it.
Oh, man, that's funny. That's funny.
Like, whatever. And then I watched it again with Jesse later on that evening.
Nice. It's funny, actually. I did some reading about it because it's I find these sorts of a lot of times people complain about why a company does something, right? Is it just bad engineering? Is it whatever? But a lot of times all these different technologies have different trade-offs or different things that you're doing that are conflicting. And I guess what happened was Apple, a lot of people assumed that there was just so much traffic that's what caused the original slowdown. But
yeah,
but wasn't the case. A bit of a goof on Apple's part. So the Chinese dub thing had to do with how they were. So it was the first time they were streaming to Japan and China, simulcasting the whole thing, and they just messed that up pretty bad. But what's interesting is the reason why it worked for you, James, is probably because it was broken HTML. And what you didn't do is you didn't download the CSS or the JavaScript, because it was actually the AJAX that was the asynchronous Java whatever that was updating their main web page with all the cool, like, it's beautiful, it's the greatest thing I've ever seen, oh my goodness, yeah, it's the greatest. That was actually what was causing most problems for most people, the broken web stream. So if you could get just the feed without the rest of the web page, it would work.
Which I did.
Yeah, exactly. So it was it's one of those weird, like, you know, conflicting technologies. What are you supposed to do? You know, trying to do something cool and unique, but it just didn't work the way they'd planned. And then Samsung, obviously.
Were you watching it on your phone?
Well, so it was a week at work, man. It was a week at work. I was super excited to sit down, get it going on my phone, have the live stream bloggers from all the different websites going, and my boss scheduled a meeting at 10 p.m. like right as we were going, and it was like a.m. It was like an hour long meeting, and I got done and I jumped on, and it was very broken and it didn't really work, and I saw about 30 minutes of the whole thing, and then I downloaded it and just watched it afterwards.
Okay. Fair enough.
I skipped most of U2's performance. No offense, U2, but
me too.
I actually like the song, but I just didn't. I wanted to see technology, and that was not what I was there for. I tend to be a U2 fan. That, in my defense.
So I made some iPhones this week.
Oh yeah,
made my own. Here's one.
Ooh, it's beautiful. Johnny Ives would be proud.
Here's the other.
So for those of you who are listening and not watching, I will describe. It is a cardboard-ish block with blue painter's tape on it and a Sharpie drawn for the screen, home button, speaker button, and let me see the backs. You forgot the most important detail.
Jesse wanted me to add a logo
to it. How do we know they're iPhones if it doesn't have an Apple on it?
That's a good question. You have to take my word for it.
Right.
So as we all know, I've been in the market for a phone and was going to get an iPhone. And they unveiled two sizes, a 4.7-inch phone and a 5.5-inch phone. And I wasn't sure which size to get. And, you know, because there's certain benefits to the bigger phone that I liked while using it, and the question was, would I like it when I'm not using it? And so I built some models. These are replicas I don't think the thickness is right, but it's really close.
Okay.
Because I just didn't feel like shaving my cardboard down to get it right. So, and they're lighter than how they are officially.
I'm doubt they're much lighter, though, knowing Apple.
I know. Well, that was, like, I was showing Jesse, I was like, it's a little heavier than that. She's like, oh my gosh, that's so light, no way. And I was like, have you felt the 5S? That sucker is pretty darn light.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see how close I got when I actually get it. So, I ended up ordering a couple iPhones.
Nice.
Yeah.
You're a true blue fanboy.
I am, and I'll admit it, I'm pumped about it. After all of my experimenting and stuff, I ended up getting the 5.5.
Interesting. That's what your wife got too, as well, correct?
Yes, yes. We both got the 64 gigabytes. She got the space gray. I got the old silver.
Oh man, no, nobody got the gold. I feel like
put a case around them, and so it'll be white and black.
Yeah, right. It's funny. I feel like gold is going to do really poorly. The champagne is going to do really poorly this time around. I feel like everybody got really excited about it last year when the 5S came out, and then we all remembered we don't like rose gold. We don't like champagne. And I feel like I think in Asia it will do incredibly well because they tend to like gold colored stuff. It's a very very popular color, which is arguably the reason why Apple
did it. Wearing gold headphones.
I know. I'm going to get the gold because gold is best.
You have to say that with an accent. I feel like
I tried to.
Like maybe gold, Russian.
Gold is best. It's the yeah. I was who is that? It was who's making fun of that announcement? Is that Big Red, Conan O'Brien?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So that was what we ended up getting. And I'll share my story of ordering if you want now, and then we can talk about the details of what it is I actually got. And so it went on sale Friday morning, midnight. Thursday night, midnight hits, I start the refresh.
Yeah.
Doing the Apple Store webpage and the App Store app on my phone. And as we have hinted at earlier today, or earlier in this show, apparently Apple isn't the best at doing the web thing, which isn't a surprise. So 20 minutes went by, and then the App Store came online. The store app came online. Huh. Website was down. And so I went online and I ordered Jesse's phone, put it into the old, the cart, and then was like, all right, going to go back and get mine. Went to get mine and it was out of stock.
Oh.
Already. We're talking like
no bueno.
22 at this point. And, I was on top of it,
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, no. And so I tried a few times. I waited 20 minutes before I went, you know what? I'm just going to finish Jesse's order, and then I'm going to keep trying. And so that's what I did. I finished off her order, bought it, which ordering stuff on their app is scary easy.
Yeah, it is.
It's crazy how fast I spent $400 with just a couple taps. And so so I ordered hers.
So you got the 64 gig 5-inch one.
5.5 64 gig space gray iPhone for Jesse. Right. And then I kept trying for mine, and it wasn't working. I went on the Twitter and was like trying to read the comments and stuff, and people were like, "Oh yeah, it's the app, it's open, it's working." I'm like, "It's not for me." And then I specifically searched for like out of stock or unavailable or whatever the phrase was, and there were a bunch of people who were like, "What do you do? What do you do?" Like, "I don't know, keep trying." And and so then it was at 110, 105. Somewhere in there. So I was at it for a while. kind of refreshing both. The website never came up. Not once.
Wow.
The app, I was at one time, I had it, so it was like, I had the size, I had the color, I had the gigs, and then you could choose, like, for this iPhone or for, you know, for another iPhone, and then you would choose AT&T, and then it would ask for your information for what phone it was. And I was just kind of flipping back and forth between the two because it would kind of do a refresh each time. And then at one random time, it worked.
Mm.
You know, all of a sudden it was like, oh, available. And I was like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And so I hit the button, and it was, like, for another iPhone. And so I put in my information, hit the submit button, and it was like, we cannot complete your order because we cannot contact the carrier right now to determine if this phone is yours. But here was the interesting part. It went, but don't worry. Your spot has been saved in line. We've got a phone reserved for you. You'll get an email telling you, like, to complete it, and then you'll have 24 hours from the time you get that email. Otherwise, you lost your spot in line. So I was like, okay. And so I hit done or whatever. And then I go back to the app, and I'm like, let me just for the fun of this, let me try this again. Unavailable again. I'm like, yep, whatever. I'm going to bed.
Right. So what time was this?
It was like 1:10 in the morning.
All right. That's you beat me to staying up.
And then so I woke up at 6 o'clock like normal.
It's actually not
and checked and I had an email. I had two emails, one confirming the order for Jesse's phone and one confirming my reservation. And then it was about like I don't know, maybe 10 o'clock in the morning. I got the follow up email saying, "Hey, complete your order. You got 24 hours to do it." And I did it that minute. No big deal. Now here's the interesting part. I can go to the Apple's website and view my order history.
Okay.
I ordered two items on September 12th.
Yes, you did.
There's mine, which was on top because it was the latter of the two because I ordered it second. It will be delivered by 9/19, so high fives all around. I'm getting mine this Friday.
Nice.
Jesse's, which was ordered before mine.
Right, correct.
By like almost an hour before me.
Correct.
Hers will be here sometime between October 1st and October 6th.
Whoa. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So I'm like, I told her too in the morning because, she woke up before I had finished my reservation. I was like, well, I ordered one and I ordered yours first. I was like, I'm being nice.
You're doing the husband thing.
Because I knew her screen was kind of busted and she wanted it right away. So I was like, so I got yours and I went, and mine I think is reserved. I don't know what that means.
Right.
And so, yeah, and then I was kind of hoping that, because I looked at this on Friday, and I just opened it up now because I was like, I wonder what it says. And sure enough, mine says preparing the ship, and hers is still processing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wah, wah, wah. Apple fail.
Yeah. Well, nobody's perfect.
I mean, unless apparently Space Gray is uber popular, but I'm like, it was at 12:22, and I'm just wondering, like, because I waited, should I not have waited the 20 minutes to check out? I didn't know, and then I got caught up in the whole fact, oh, it wasn't working, let me keep trying,
I wonder if that's the case, because I'll be totally honest, I know quite a few people who, who went with the Space Gray, who I would not have expected to. And I'm willing to bet that Gold sold a lot better than they had thought it would last year, and they had constraints, so they rejiggered their numbers, and this time around they had more Gold and less Space Gray, and Americans went back to liking Space Gray, and I wonder if that had anything to do with it. It'll be interesting. Unfortunately, those are the kind of numbers that are very difficult to get out of Apple. But hopefully somebody will write an article and do some sleuthing.
Yeah, not me, but because I'll be busy playing with my new iPhone on Friday.
Yeah, that's
and
awesome.
Jesse's going to have to wait. I feel so bad. So anyways, that was my experience.
So Apple launched some bigger iPhones is the takeaway here. They finally have caught up with 2012.
Welcome to the future or to the past. Back to the future. How does that work? Whatever.
So what do we think? What do we think about the Apple strategy with the new iPhones?
Their strategy?
Yeah.
Same-o. You know, yeah. I mean, clearly 4.7 is the new standard for a normal phone size. And so they're catching up to that, and you know, and that's fine. The 5.5 is more of that, what are we calling it? Is that the phablet space?
Yeah.
You know, so now they're filling that in. That's fine. And now that since they're keeping the 5S and the 5C, they've still got those smaller form factors. You know, it feels like a pretty complete lineup, you know, at least until Android does something new this year. And then it won't feel so complete again, but, you know, that's the way it works.
Yeah, it feels pretty at parity. You know, obviously, I'm more excited about Windows 8, as is my usual, because that's where they do a lot of their cool little updates, you know, and that's where
What are you waiting for?
What?
What are you waiting for?
iOS 8.
Oh, okay.
You know, the new keyboard.
You said Windows 8. Oh, so I was like, huh. Okay.
Well, I'm not waiting for Windows 8, as we will get into in the near future.
iOS 8.
Yeah, iOS 8. And, you know, because they've got some cool updates coming along down the line. But I think from a hardware perspective, I think it was interesting that they went with the it's a better camera in the 6 Plus.
Yep.
That's tough for me. Because it's like, I feel like if everything else was exactly tick for tack, I would be pretty tempted to just go with the 4.7, as I've been saying. It's so fun. God, I'm so predictable. I even predicted this about myself, where I would say until the phone came out that I wanted the 4.7. And then as soon as the 5.5 came out, I'd go with the 5.5. And I'm talking myself into getting the 5.5. I don't want that big of a phone. I don't know why I'm trying, like, why I'm doing this to myself, but I'm doing it anyways. It's the phone, the camera is astounding. The regular old 6 camera is astoundingly better than the one that I have, which is a very good camera. And I'm still want just that much better because of all the photographs that I take.
Optical stabilization, man.
Mechanical optical stabilization. That's the real trick there. They stuck with the 8 megapixels, but they made an even bigger CMOS chip than before. You know what I thought was really interesting? One of our uncles has a couple of the Nikon DSLR fancy-dancy digital cameras. And he's getting that little chip that we were talking about last week, Wi-Fi chip. And he had also bought a used one online, got a screaming deal. Another one of our uncles, also bought a Samsung Galaxy S5 rather recently. It had been an iPhone user all along, like pretty much everybody in our family, and was bragging about how cool his camera was, or his phone was. And one of the things that he threw out there was his 16 or 12 or whatever megapixel camera. And our uncle that owns the Nikons brought up the point that that the two Nikons, these are like $6,000 brand new cameras. They're a couple thousand dollars used. They have 8 megapixel chips in them, but the aperture is like the size of a quarter. The size of the chip is the size of a quarter. So they're gigantic pixels compared to everything else.
Right.
And that gives them a number of advantages, like really, really, really quick response times and very high quality pictures. But it is interesting that Apple is they're having a hard time changing that conversation, getting caught up in the megapixel debate when they are, you know, arguably doing what professional photographers do, which is make better cameras and make better lenses, make better chips, and not improve the overall size of their mm-hmm. chipset, which I thought is interesting. It's really interesting to watch them, you know, stick with it, especially because like we have like avid fans for family
Sorry.
Members that went out and bought it
Say
the first
time
as well, and they were disappointed.
Whoa.
We have avid, or some of our cousins, we have family Am I back?
You're good now. You're back.
Do I need to turn down my... I'm going to turn down for what? We have family who are very avid fans of Apple, and they were disappointed by the 8-megapixel cameras. They're like, I wanted a better camera, and you're like, that's really not necessarily.
It is better.
Anything. It is a better camera. It's a much better camera. It's a better camera than a lot of point and shoots out there, and it's demonstrably better than a lot of smartphone cameras out there, and a lot better in many cases. And I'm going to be totally honest with you, James. I am no photographer. I'm actually very bad at taking pictures. So you know what I want more than a good lens and good camera? Is I want a smart camera. I want a camera that's going to take a big, good picture no matter what, and it's going to do it on its own. That will become a gripe of mine, I'm sure, even louder and louder over the next few weeks. Because turns out that, you know, don't blame the tool, blame the craftsman. I'm blaming the craftsman here, except Apple builds great tools, and some other companies... Anyways, I hope people understand what I keep teasing here is that I bought a phone on Thursday as well, and wasn't on an iPhone though. I don't know. It's an interesting, you know, they really shied away from a lot of spec sheet type stuff. You know,
that's normal.
Yeah, and it's good because it's like CNET came out with a list of all your different tit for tat, you know, specs, and you know, there was everything was as good if not better on the in the Android marketplace. And I hate when people like, you know, compare chipsets and stuff, because it's just such an unfair comparison. And I feel like, okay, we didn't get that back in the 90s, we didn't get that back in the early 2000s, but by this point I feel like that's got to be becoming pretty widespread knowledge that the best way to do, if you're going to do comparative phones, you have to do speed tests, you have to actually do performance tests. That's where, you know, that's where you actually, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff, as it were. It's really easy for a phone. It's easier to buy a really powerful chip than it is to make a really high performance operating system. And you know, that's where even if the A8 doesn't perform at the same level, which it does in most cases, it's not that simple of an equation. You got to, you know, how fast does it render JavaScript? How fast does it build a web page? How fast do the app runs? How fast does it, you know, do a bazillion, you know, different whatever? And unfortunately, you don't get a lot of that. But I don't know. They're cool phones. I feel like we were pretty dead on in it. In our predictions.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that I thought was remarkable is how accurate everybody's predictions were of everything, you know? Even had NFC.
Yeah, NFC.
That to me is that actually I think is the killer feature for the phone set. That's what I want. That's why I'm getting that's not the only reason I'm going to get an iPhone 6, but that is definitely like, when I think about a bigger phone, when I think about a better processor and stuff, I feel like I could actually, I would be okay getting getting a 5S if it weren't for the fact that it doesn't have NFC. And I want NFC.
You want to make some payments with your phone, huh?
Yeah, man. I want to get rid of my wallet.
So you think that's a killer app? Think it's actually going to work?
I think so. I've heard a lot of other experts that aren't as expert as us, but they call themselves experts, and we call ourselves experts, so hopefully by respecting that, they'll respect us. I don't know if that's how it works, but I've heard a lot of people say that they think that this is, you know, of all the huge announcements that Apple made on that day, this is the one that's really going to be a really dramatic shift for the company. and for the tech sector in general. You know, the incrementally improving the iPhone is going to be, they're going to sell a tremendous number of iPhones. It's going to be crazy, and it's going to be a best-selling phone, and it's going to eat away at even more at Samsung's margins, because they make most of their money on high-end, large-sized phones. And, you know, now people who could go either way kind of wanted to try the iPhone but just wanted a big screen, now they're going to go and get an iPhone. And the pricing schedule stays the same, which is pretty awesome. I think that this payment system, what it'll do is it'll really push us in the advantage, or in the direction of, you know, getting over to wireless payment stuff. It's funny. I talked to employees at the Microsoft store about their wallet stuff, and they were like, yeah, it works, but nobody has anything that'll work with it because there was no adoption of it. You know, why would you spend money on a new payment system for something that
has a small installed base?
Exactly. And you know, and Apple, obviously, they made a big deal about talking about all the big users that are already out there. The McDaniels, the Walmarts,
not Walmart.
Was it Walmart? Was it Target?
Probably. Yeah, notably Walmart and Best Buy are not participating.
Yet. Why is it? Do they have another strategy? Is that their thing?
They have a competing standard that they are trumpeting.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see who wins, which I doubt it'll be Walmart. And it's funny. I mean, I feel like, you know,
Walmart's problem, the one that they're, I can't remember what it's called now. It's like MWC or MCW. Actually wants to go around the current credit card payment system, like create a whole new infrastructure.
Yeah.
You know, which obviously MasterCard, Visa, and American Express, and Discover, and all those ones are not a super fan of.
Right.
Because they don't want to be cut out. And so I ultimately think it won't work because they won't get on board, and customers aren't going to carry around just another card for the sake of it. Especially when the alternative is you don't carry around a card, or at least you don't get it out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go around them. Instead, it creates a token and, you know, makes it more secure that way, so it can play within the system.
Yeah, this is so classic Apple, where they're playing ball, you know. And it was, why did iTunes work? Why did the iPod work? Well, because they decided to play ball with the musicians. They actually negotiated with the artists, with the labels, and yeah, it cost everybody more because they played ball, but it actually allowed it to happen. And
yeah, well, and it was, they said, like, your alternative is that everyone's going to rip your music and steal it, and you'll have nothing.
Yeah,
play our way, at least you get a buck. Yeah, you got to share it with us and a bunch of other people, but that's the way it works. And you get the sense that they really use that same logic, dude. There's this thing called Bitcoin. It's trying to eat your lunch. You know, Walmart, Best Buy. They got this. They're trying to get after you. Okay, let's work together here.
Yeah, somebody is going to succeed. So give us, and I think it's like, it's not much. It's like 15 cents for every $100 that Apple gets. It's a small amount of money, but there's, as they've noted, there are like trillions of dollars worth of you know, financial exchanges made every year, and so that could become a $1 billion business every time they handle one of those, you know. And it's like, it's crazy how much money they're spending, and not to mention the fact that it works online, and does the tokenized thing. It's funny. I mean, it's like, I think they did it right. I absolutely think they did it right. They're playing ball with all the big companies. They're giving you a security, you know, a lot of people's concerns of, well, what if it gets hacked? And they're like, yeah, but they basically said, look how insecure your credit card is. You've got to give it to some slacky who works behind the, you know, the retail desk, which I think is, it's kind of a low blow. Like, I got a lot of friends who work behind the counter. I work behind the counter.
You know, in Europe, they are not allowed to take your card out of your sight.
I know. They've all got wireless wireless things, and they walk up to you and they just run it at your table, which, you know, honestly, like, makes sense. You know, it makes sense from a security perspective. This makes more sense from a security perspective because, you know, obviously, well, they're not going to take your phone, but the point is they could, and as long as you got your phone back, there's nothing they could do with your security credentials, because all you're doing is passing around a one-time token, right? And the other big advantage here, and I think this is going to become a bigger and bigger deal it's a big enough deal to enough people that I think it'll work, and this is something that Apple's been getting bigger and bigger on, but it's the idea that Apple doesn't know where you spent your money. All it does is it talks, you know, it talks to the two, it basically sets up a channel for the two companies. None of that information gets sent back to their servers. They're not tracking they couldn't track what you bought or how much you spent, even if they wanted. At best, they could keep track of where you spent your money. Now, who, you know, Visa shares that information with, who McDonald's shares that information with, you know, is whatever. It is what it is. Well, you know, if the NSA wants to know how many French fries I ate, they're going to find out still. But at least, you know, for those of people who are afraid of the Googles of the world, you know, tracking everything and just being one more group that knows everything about you, Apple's whole one of their big value propositions in this is that they're not involved. They don't want to know. They don't care. Just go do whatever you're going to do. Live your life. Just use us as the channel. And, you know, I think that there's remarkably more value in that than I think will be noticeable at first. It's one of those weird, you know, I was talking with somebody just this weekend about iMessages and the NSA, and how, you know, one of the cool things about iMessages is all the encryption and decryption is done at the iPhone level. So even though, yeah, the NSA has a backup of every single one of your iMessages, they'd actually have to do a brute force decryption of it, which is time consuming and difficult. And they're not going to do that just for the fun of it. They're going to have a reason. Whereas, you know, searching the rest of the text message database, they might do that just for the fun of it because it takes no effort. You know, there's an advantage there, and people are slowly respecting Apple for that. They're slowly respecting Apple less for their their web services, but, you know, as they get more and more traffic. But, you know, in their defense, you know, a couple of celebrities had their nude pictures leaked, but 5 million Gmail passwords got leaked using the exact same technique. So, you know, you can't be... Nobody's perfect.
So a fun story related to the Apple Pay thing is the level of secrecy that they went through. I like this one from the Deal Book on the New York Times. It says that J.P. Morgan Chase's chief financial officer, Marianne Lake, took the stage at a financial conference on Tuesday under strict orders not to mention her company's involvement in Apple's new payment system. She happened to be on stage around the same time that, you know, Apple was holding their conference. But when Apple's chief executive, Timothy D. Cook, at a news conference in California at the same time, finally brought up Apple Pay, one of Ms. Lake's deputies in New York took a green apple out of her bag and put it on the table on the stage, signaling that Ms. Lake was free to discuss the service.
Nice.
Yeah, kind of fun. Pretty cool. So they talk about, you know, and then she says, you know, we're really excited about it and being able to participate. And they're talking about the elaborate measures that she took to keep Apple Pay under wraps until a chosen time underscores the degree of preparation and investment that went into a partnership that has the potential to transform one of the banking industry's most fundamental business lines. Apparently, and they don't tell you what it was, but they were using code names for it's the Merchant Customer Exchange, MCE. was the Walmart and Best Buy thing that they're trying to champion. But they were saying that they were using code names, and in order to throw people off, they were using other company, you know, phone manufacturers as their code names. So, even if people figured out what they were talking about, they wouldn't have the right company.
That's funny. So,
yeah, but kind of just kind of.
Everybody was really, really, really impressed by how under wraps it was. I mean, it's you know, Apple's capable of keeping secrets. It's funny because they made the, you know, when Phil Schiller got on stage and he talked about the iPhone, it's going to come in two sizes. And for those of you who don't know, it's a 4.7 and 5.5, and everybody laughed because everybody knew. And you know, I've been harping on it for the past couple of months that, you know, this is a controlled leak. That was a controlled leak. This is a controlled leak. These are things that are meant to throw you off the scent. They're leading things. They're telling you, you know, it's a classic magician's magic trick. They're showing you what's in one hand so you won't look in what the other in his hand is. And that, I think, is really indicative of what they think is important.
They just have no control over the leaks once they start manufacturing it. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Things that they were already manufacturing, they couldn't keep a secret. Things that they were not, because it's either software or they're not going to release it yet, they were able to keep it a secret.
Well, yeah, but nobody had seen a picture of the... Nobody had any idea what the iWatch looked like. Everybody was
I know. Like I said, because they weren't manufacturing it yet, they were able to keep it a secret.
I see. Yeah, okay, fair enough. But, you know, I think they at the same time... You know, there are clear indications, and maybe I'm a total conspiracy theorist in that case, but to me that there are clear indications that they're trying to control the conversation of, you know, what they can and can't leak. But, you know, they do a good job. They use it to their advantage because it caught people off guard. And, you know, and Apple's got the scale, man. They got what it takes. And it's funny. It's like with the headphone jacks. You know, it's a small thing to think about, and where, you know, Apple didn't go out of their way to change how the headphone jack standard. It's one of those things where it's like, they're not pleased that it happened, because now you can, you know, any $10 pair of headphones you buy works with an iPhone. And it's funny, the latest Nokia headsets, they have an electronic in them that allows them to switch automatically so that they can work on both standards. But Apple, you know, Apple's not pleased by that. They liked having kind of you locked into this obscure standard. Now, when Apple tries to actually push a standard, holy cowabunga, you know, they have a way. They've got enough weight nowadays where people will follow. It'll move the needle. And I read an article, and, you know, once again, I just like being right, which is why I bring this up. It's perfect timing, because you're about to move into this new realm of everybody's got all the credit card companies have to sell or are now shipping the chipped cards, which have a higher security threshold, right?
Yep.
And legally, in order to be a merchant, you don't have to get one of the new security things. But how they're incentivizing merchants to switch over to the new ones is liability for theft and for fraud moves over to the merchant. Right now, all the liability is held on the credit card companies for everything. Coming very soon, it's going to be on the backs of the merchants if they don't upgrade. So everybody's got to go out and buy new hardware. Well, why not have an NFC built in with it? And why not have it work with the most widespread, you know, standard out there that everybody's got? And, you know, and it's super secure and everybody likes it. Well, yeah, it'll work. And what I think what you're really going to see, honestly, is you're going to see a way for, you know, one NFC chip. You're going to see them, you know, because I unfortunately don't know anything about the NFC chip specs. As was made clear last week, it's one of those things where I don't have it just in time or just in case. I feel like I need to go learn more about it, because I'm sure there's different communication protocols and stuff, but I wonder if it's possible to have different receiver and, you know, transceivers, like three different transceivers in the thing. So you can have one that works with Walmart, one that works with Google, one that works with the iPhone, and you just swipe it, and whichever one's there, it'll work, you know. And I wonder if that's kind of what we'll see you move in the direction of. But eventually, you'll just see everybody move in the direction of something like Apple's. And, you know, obviously Apple's channel will be Apple's channel, and it's something that they'll protect. And they're not going to put Apple Pay into a Samsung phone, but I'm sure they're going to do it in such a way that Samsung can leverage the user base that's out there. So that, you know, McDonald's will only have one card reader per, you know, one reader per cashier, right. And it'll work with Samsung because Samsung's using Apple standards. And, you know, that's the direction they'll go. And it'll be awesome. And I think that's the biggest, I think that was the biggest announcement made. And
so you think that's bigger than the watch, huh?
I do think it's bigger than the watch. I think it's far
are
less.
Are you going to go out and get a watch?
Oh, of course. Yeah, are you pumped? I think it's far less sexier than the watch.
Really?
What? Really?
Really? You're going to get a watch, huh?
Of course.
Man, what style are you going to get? Have you thought that far yet?
I'm gonna wait and see. But
try it on. Wait until it's in. Is it in stores yet for you to play with? Or?
No, not yet. The iPhone's not in stores yet. The iPhone will be in stores on Friday, and I'll go check one out so I can say it's really cool too. And
convince yourself to get the 5.5. I understand.
I know.
So what did you think of the Apple Watch announcement?
It's exactly what I thought it was going to be. Actually, just for the record, they have not announced the price of the most expensive watches yet. They started at $350, and they go up from there.
Yeah.
But the rumor mill is they're going to cost as much as $1,200, which wow. I want to say, like 8 months ago, that was the price point that I was arguing, is that they're going to come out with an incredibly expensive watch. And then, you know, we had a debate about what that would look like. I think it was a good move to kind of spread the gamut, but their whole thing, man, these are their pieces of jewelry that happen to have a cool, you know, happen to have a Bluetooth antenna in them. And, you know, and they're doing it right, man. They're just, it's classic. So what is it? It's like 48 different ways that it
combinations
of hardware. And then once you include the different, you know, phone screens, there's literally millions of combinations, according to Sir Johnny Ives. And, you know, they look, it's okay. I'm going to be totally honest with you right now.
I appreciate that.
I do not actually like the look of the iPhone 6 that much, and I like the look of the 360 better. They have the Moto 360. I like the round watch face. It didn't happen. Wasn't going to happen. I'm probably going to take one look at the iWatch and be like, it's the most beautiful thing ever when I see it in person. But I will say this, and I've been saying it since the iPhone 4 came out. I like the look of the iPhone 4. That's my favorite looking iPhone. The black iPhone 4 with the stainless steel band. Oh, it's such a good looking phone. But you can't always get what you want. When you try sometimes, you get what you need. And
So you think the Moto 360 looks better?
But only by a small degree. And I think if I actually were to see both in person, when you actually look at the overall hardware build of the Apple Watch, I think you're going to be super impressed by the Apple Watch. It's just I have a feeling that the actual build quality is astounding, and its overall aesthetic. I think it's one of those things that you to actually appreciate it, the videos don't do it justice. It's funny because I took one look at it and I loved how they were talking about the digital crown and how it uses infrared, you know, things, and it's like this super high tech dial. And as soon as I saw the dial, because it was all broken up on the video stream, I didn't see that part of it. And I went, oh, I'll bet they're using some sort of an infrared thing, because you can actually seal that off mechanically from water. So that's how you'd make a dial waterproof, is you just have an infrared laser that actually measures the angular change. And then, you know, oh my gosh, I love that Apple hasn't gotten any better about like all, oh my gosh, it's this revolutionary infrared technology. You're like, that was the obvious solution that's like been in practice for decades. Like, oh my gosh, you guys are pieces of work. I love it. But what do you think about the interface for the watch in general?
I'm happy that I own a Pebble.
Oh yeah.
For the reasons that I stated a long time ago, which was now they're going to get some customer feedback and they're going to make some changes, and the second gen and probably even the third gen will be amazing.
Yeah.
The digital crown is interesting. It seems like that's like actually going to be harder to use than what we all want it to be. You know, because in order for it to zoom, it means you're going to have to get the thing right in the middle. Otherwise, it's not going to zoom perfectly, and then you're going to have to retouch it anyways. That looks confusing to me. I wish and I hope that they figure out how to do like a leap motion type of sensor. Because I think that's where the power would be. Whereas if you have it on your wrist and you can be a couple inches off and then you can pinch to zoom, you can swipe and do whatever, and you know, and now your fingers aren't in the way. But you know, just like, again, for you Android fans out there, the Samsung gesture thing already has and does. I realize you're going to take a massive battery hit if you do that, and so that's probably why they didn't go down that route. But I sit there and go, that's the obvious. Like, it's got to go to that direction eventually. Yeah. That just makes sense to me. To do the digital crown, it feels like they made it work, you know? I don't know. They're going to have to get some customer feedback on that one. I think it's going to be more annoying than we want it to be.
I think for Zoom, you're absolutely right. I think for most function, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see functionality follow form on that one a lot, where it's going to be used, where there's going to be a lot more scrolling as opposed to zooming. You know, which honestly, most computer stuff, it's you don't, if you think about what you do on most computers, you don't zoom a tremendous amount. Obviously, on the iPhone,
that's
you
true.
Use it all the time on, you know, but it's like, if I can double tap to zoom, I'll just double tap to zoom. I think you're absolutely right. There'll be a lot more of that sort of an interface. And I don't know, it'll be interesting. I like the taptic feedback. We right device or right technology, wrong device. You know, I totally bought that it was coming to the iPhone. Didn't think it was coming to the Apple Watch. They threw a curveball.
Yeah, the long press is going to be an interesting one, and we'll definitely see that come to the next generation iPhone.
Oh yeah,
that's a no brainer.
Yeah, I heard some people say that like the having it feel like somebody's tapping you on the wrist as opposed to buzzing is a big improvement, just of overall comfort and utility. Yeah, which I thought was interesting. This is one of those shows where I'm going to be totally
on
total honesty. The reason why I'm going to get it is because of it's a nonstop continuous heart rate monitor, and that's what I've wanted. That's what I've wanted for a long time, and those are very expensive. They cost $300 to get something like that. Anyways, I mean, I sit there and I go, yeah, okay, I'm going to pay $450-$500 for the sport version of the watch, and it's going to be considerably more expensive, which is kind of annoying. But you know, it's not like that sort of a technology is free. And the only reason I don't own one already is because I was waiting for the Apple Watch, because I figured it was coming to the Apple Watch or something similar, you know. And so, you know, it's exactly what I want / need, and you know, for health reasons. And that's why I'll get the special aluminum alloy for extra hardness. And because I don't want to spend $1,200 on a rose gold Apple Watch. I thought it was interesting that the sapphire glass is all for the watch, you know.
Called it.
Despite that, yeah, you did. You totally did. It's not Gorilla Glass though. It's like special on the iPhone. It's special ionized, you know, whatever glass. I don't know what that means, but I'm sure we'll hear about it more as time goes on. But it's, you know, I think what'll happen is Apple did what Apple does. They made a luxury piece of jewelry. It'll be functionally very good. Google's going to go to parity. They'll have improvements in functionality. You know, I think I actually get a feeling that Google will be a leader in features on this one, which, you know, in reality is they're a leader in features on the smartphones too. But widespread adoption and acceptance will come when Apple finally picks it up, you know, and like you said, it'll take a couple of generations for the two to kind of get their act together. But what Apple's going to do is it's going to make it cool. You know, it's going to make it fashionable. You will see really, really, really rich people on TV wearing them. And you're going to see kids wearing them, and you're going to see, you know, people are going to ask for them for Christmas. I still think you're going to have a watershed moment when, you know, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, that little tiny 3G antenna, the idea of sipping data, you know, not high-end web pages and stuff, but sort of just the micro notifications that the phone is capable of. If you could do that at a very low cost, like, you know, $100 for a yearly contract or something like that, where it's, you know, or having the company building it into the cost of the device, that sort of a solution would be...
Or, I don't know, I mean, like AT&T now, they got, you know, those data buckets.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're paying $5, $10 to add your device to your bucket.
Yeah, and I do think that's a solution, that's a direction that will make it, you know, but I think you still got to work on battery life. It was, you know, the big deal everybody talked about. They didn't say anything about battery life, which Tim Cook was like, yeah, we did. We said you were going to charge it every night. That's battery life, man. I think it'll be fascinating to see what the actual battery life is. You know, is it 12 hours? Is it 18 hours? Is it 8 hours? Is it, you know, I'm guessing 16 hours, 12 to 16 hours, my guess.
Yeah, I was thinking about that while camping this weekend. I was like, man, which, I mean, I've got my battery pack and I ended up using it. And so I actually haven't charged my phone since Friday, and I'm sitting about 20% right now. But I had it on airplane mode a lot, and I actually turned my Pebble off at night as well.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, with that, there's no way I would make it. I'd have to charge it at some time. But I'm also like, would I take it out camping with me? Is it that kind of watch?
Yeah, right. That's one of the big reasons why when I buy the Moto X, and they go on pre-order in 2 days, and I'm going to be totally honest with James, I'm not entirely sure I'm not going to just jump back. I'm going to move at a whiplash speed and just be there right at the pre-order. I kind of want to – they haven't said when they're actually going to go on sale yet, or at least the article that I read, but – the reason, one of the things is when I get the Moto X, I'm going to get the 360 because I want to test it out. I want to see what it's like. Yeah. What's the deal, yo? And, you know, I think that's a, you know, there are big questions on this, and I'm looking forward to figuring it out myself. And
so you had mentioned, speaking of testing new devices, you've been teasing significantly.
Mm-hmm.
So what's been going on with you recently? What are your recent retail adventures?
Right. In the past, in the show, if you're a longtime listener, you know that I bought a when I bought my iPhone 5, I didn't just buy an iPhone 5. I went to the retail store and said, hey, what's your restocking fee? And they said, way too much, but, you know, I'm dumb and young and had the money, so I decided to go on a little adventure. And I bought a Lumia 920, I think it was, back in the day. It was the first Windows 8 phone.
That's right.
Just come out, and it was a Nokia phone, and I was very excited about it. So I bought one, and I tried it out for, I think it was 2 weeks. And then I came back, and I returned it, and I got a Samsung
something
3GS at the time, and tried that out for a couple of weeks and returned it, and then finally got the iPhone 5 and kept it because for a whole slew of different reasons. And I came away with a number of different opinions about the different devices, but I felt one of the big things that I really appreciated about it was when people have really stupid arguments about which device is better and why, I was able to come at it with a voice of experience, and B, by virtue of that, a voice of authority. And I kind of came at it a little more level-headed. I wasn't reading inflammatory articles.
Voice of reason.
Exactly. I could sit there and say, yeah, they're basically the same. They're both pretty cool. I picked the iPhone because of X, Y, and Z. It does this better, and it met my needs a little bit more, which is, you know, I think a completely valid argument. So I decided to do that again because I'm going to, you know, it's about that time. I got the cashola. I'm going to upgrade. But as long-term listeners know, I'm also T-Mobile user, which means that I'm like contract free and I can go all willy-nilly and do crazy stuff. And because I got the, and I've been saving for the phone, so I had cash set aside, and I went and made a purchase on Thursday. I figured everybody else was getting a new phone, so I got a new phone too, and here it is.
Look at that.
Oh baby. For those of you who are listening and not watching, I am holding up to the phone a Nokia 1020, Nokia Lumia 1020, which is the 41 megapixel Windows Phone 8.
That's the big camera one, like we talked about. Yeah, you got it.
I did get it. And
are the photos amazing?
Nope. And this goes back to the comment I made earlier. I am not a good photographer, and I forgot that because the iPhone does most of the work of taking good pictures for you. It does it all programmatically. It's a big deal because they're unlocking the rest of the cool, like, exposure features and all those things that I don't know anything about. I'd like to know about it, but once again, I don't have it just in case. I don't have it just in time. I just don't have it. Because I haven't needed it because I've had an iPhone, and it takes pretty decent pictures just on its own. And this guy, I hear it's capable of really great pictures, but I can't tell because my pictures are terrible because I just go with the standard settings. So I got to do a little bit of research because I think it might have some, you know, there might be a way to kind of set it into a more intelligent automatic, you know, feature thing. But you know, the zoom's pretty cool, I guess. I'm willing to zoom, which is nice, but it turns out like I don't have many pictures that require a zoom. I'm going to force myself to hang on to it until I go to a concert at the end of this month. And so hopefully have a reason to take pictures. Cause I do think it'd be, I wouldn't have an iPhone 6 at that point. So it is the best camera that I could possibly have. That's a really long time to hold on to this stupid phone, though. But it was quite the adventure. So what I did, James, is it was a Thursday night. It was about 7 o'clock, and I had nothing to do on Thursday. So I went to the Microsoft store in Valley Fair in San Jose, California. Went to the Microsoft store. I'd been there a day or two earlier to actually look at the which one I want, kind of get the feedback before I made the purchase, made sure I had everything, all my ducks in a row. And I walked in and I said, I want this phone. I want this color. I want this, 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 and this. I wanted an unlocked Lumia 1020. Cool. About 10 minutes later, I'm the proud owner of a Lumia 1020. And I go, let's open up the box. Let's do it right now. Let's get this thing. Let's get the show on the road. So I pop open the box, pop open the SIM tray of both phones, and take one look at it and go, oh yeah, that's right. Nokia hates Apple for fighting them on the SIM card standards, and so they're still refusing to do anything that would make life easier for iPhone users. And so instead of using the nano SIM, which is what the iPhone uses, it uses the macro SIM or the micro SIM, which is a bigger SIM card. And I breathed sigh deeply and I said, okay, what do I have to do? And the nice girl that was helping me out at the Microsoft store says, well, there's an T-Mobile store right upstairs. You can go up there and get a SIM card from them. It's like, all right, that's a good idea. So thankfully, it's just a couple of steps away. Go upstairs, run down the hall, and walk in and say, look, I just got a new phone, and I need a macro or micro SIM. Guy goes, no problem. And he goes, you know, sorry for making you wait. This one's on the house. I was like, what do you mean it's on the house? He's like, well, they're usually $10. Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's good to know. As an unexpected cost. I just spent $600 on a phone, and I'm scoffing at the $10 that he didn't charge me. and things that we make big deals out of. Anyway, so I get the SIM card, and as I'm popping it in, he turns to me and goes, "Hey, by the way, just so you know, it takes a little while for your iMessages to come through." I was like, "Cool. What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, when you switch from an iPhone, all of the iPhone users, yeah, they send you the message." And how iMessages works is basically, if you send a message to an iPhone from an iPhone, Apple's got a big database of all phone numbers that are iPhone users. And basically what happens is when you get a text message, if the text message number matches a number on the database, then they basically go, okay, your phone now knows that it's talking to an iPhone. So it will now send iMessages unless you tell it specifically to do otherwise. You have to flip a little switch to send text messages. And so what this means is that everything is being sent from iMessages, but it's not your phone it's not your phone number that knows if it's an iMessage. Every other phone that you've talked to has in their own memory that what is an iPhone. So if you are no longer an iPhone and I'm texting you, your phone doesn't know that my phone's on an iPhone. So it'll keep sending me iMessages. And the worst part is it'll keep successfully sending me iMessages because I have a Mac and an iPad and an iPod Touch and everything else under the sun, Apple. So all those messages will get to me, just not in a timely fashion. But I looked at him and I was like, one of my big things was, you know, I don't want to be tempted to go back to the iPhone. I'm doing this. It's costing a bit of money. I want to actually get the full experience. I want to get past I want to be forced to download the apps that I need. Like, you know, I wanted to test out, you know, it'd be really tempting. If I could just switch the SIM card back and forth, it'd be really tempting to once a day pop the SIM card really quickly into my iPhone and just use the Fitbit app on my iPhone and never go back. Or if I don't like the music that I'm listening to, just use the iPhone. No, I want to force myself to do it. So I kind of like the idea of having a SIM card that wouldn't work with the iPhone. So I was like, okay, whatever. I don't know. It's a Thursday. It's a one day of work and then a couple of days on the weekend. No big deal. If somebody misses a message, everyone will survive. So I walk out of the store, I walk to the Levi store, and I try to download Pandora because I don't have any music on my phone, and I realize, oh, it's not downloading. I'm having a problem reaching the server. So I walk back to the Microsoft store and I say, hey, I'm having a little bit of a hard time reaching the servers. Do you know what's going on? And they're like, no, but what we can do is we can re-image the phone, completely restart it, and then it also has the advantage of being now up to date on Windows 8.1, which is a big deal because that's the actual like new operating system, and it's a major upgrade from what I had tried 2 years ago. So I was like, yeah, please go for it. It takes 20 minutes, but whatever. I don't even know if T-Mobile supports updating the operating system, so this is a surefire way to get it. So they take the phone for me. Obviously, at this point, you're aware of this part of the story. You're shopping, and I FaceTimed you, and while we were FaceTiming, I said, hey, because I'm on Wi-Fi now, it's like, hey, can you do me a favor? I message my phone number and I will see if I get the message over Wi-Fi. I figured it would work that way and it did work that way. I got the iMessage. So I was like, cool. Now I've got a solution. I can tether. I've got unlimited – or not unlimited. I got a lot of tethering. Nope. So I can tether my phone. I can check it every once in a while. Check if I'm getting any iMessages. I'll be fine. Like I'm just going to – I've even got a solution now. So they come back with the phone after 20 minutes and we're going through the setup and making sure everything's working. Everything's going great. And I say, okay, I'm going to try tethering really quick. Tethering doesn't work on the phone. And I was like, why is it not this work? It's not working. It's telling me that I need to upgrade my plan with T-Mobile. Well, I know I've got the plan. Everybody on T-Mobile has the plan. It just eats into your bucket of high speed internet. Right. So, I was like, this is stupid. And they're like, well, maybe it has something to do with the fact that you got the globally unlocked. You need to go talk to T-Mobile. They'll sort it out. So I'm like, okay. So I run back up to the T-Mobile store, and I go in. I'm in there for like half an hour, and we're talking and joking. They're talking to the customer support, and they're talking technical everything. And finally they get done, and they say, look, it's a access point network, an APN thing. We can't fix it. Nokia has to fix it, and if they don't fix it, then probably Microsoft, you know, one of those two. I was like, well, okay, I guess I'll run back downstairs. And at this point, I'm kind of like, well, this is frustrating. But once again, what's going to happen in 3 days that's really that much of an emergency? And as I'm walking out of the store, all of a sudden I turn around with like white look on my face. And they're like, what? And I was like, oh, I need iMessages to work. And they're like, okay. I was like, I have a date, a first date with a girl tomorrow or on Saturday. And she's an iPhone user, and I need to be able to get these messages. This is like super important, guys. Like, oh my gosh, like I went into full on emergency mode. I was like, I went from being cool, whatever, I'll deal with it, however long it takes, you know, kind of an adventure in technology, to like full on, like red lights blaring, like I need to return this phone if I can't find a solution. And I mean now. And so I run back down to the Microsoft store, and I was like, oh, guys, okay, emergency mode, let's figure this out. And so I sat with them, and they had their super smart tech people look at it, and they called tech support, and long story short, they couldn't figure it out. It's a really common issue, I guess, and it's really annoying. And but it's a T-Mobile problem working on these the Windows 8.1 unlocked phones for whatever reason. If it's T-Mobile branded, it usually works. It's funny, I was laughing with them. I said, T-Mobile is sort of like the Google of telecoms. It allows you to do way more than anybody else, but it requires a lot more maintenance than anybody else too. Like, I find that like I spend a lot more time trying to get everything like in a perpetual state of working than I ever did with AT&T, but I get to do a lot more that I never could have done with AT&T. So it's, you know, right. In this particular world, it's a trade-off I'm willing to deal with, but it's, geez Louise, guys, like, come on. And so anyways, So when I finally walked out of this store, I was like, they couldn't get it to work. It wasn't working. So I decided, you know what? This is stupid. I'm going up to T-Mobile, and I was like, I'm just going to have them give me the nano SIM. I'm going to hold on to the phone. I'll figure it out later. As I was walking there, I was like, you know what? I'm already this far in. You know what I'm going to do? I've got a better idea. I'm just going to get a single prepaid unlimited month. Whatever, I'll have two phone numbers for a month, and I'll have two phones, and I'll just keep them both with me. It's gonna be ridiculous, but it'll be fun, I guess. And I walked in, and I told them what my plan was, and one of the other guys goes, why don't you just get a nano adapter?
Wow, brilliant.
I was like, what? He goes, yeah, they're like, the chip is the same size, it's just the outer casing. Like, he goes you can get them for like two like 50 cents on Amazon. He goes, they're really cheap, they're not good like cut quality. He goes, you're actually better off spending $10 on one, because those are hard plastic, well manufactured, high tolerances. And I was like, why does that matter so much? He goes, well, because there's these like really soft gold pins that touch for actually reading the chip, and they bend and break really easily, and so it's not entirely uncommon for somebody to put one of the cheaper adapters into their phone, pull out the adapter, have it catch, and destroy a $600 smartphone. I was like, you know, since my plan is to not keep this phone in a month, yeah, I'm going to try to avoid that. So I bought the $10 SIM adapter. I'll have for a month. But now I've got both phones, and they both work if I need it, and I can.
Cool. And
I successfully went on my date. I kept the iPhone was live all Saturday. I figured, you know, we'll do it. And then this morning I made the SIM jump, and the iMessages are going to drive me nuts. I can already tell. I remembered some of the things that I really liked about Windows Phone 8 instantly. I remembered some of the things that I despised about Windows Phone 8 instantly. First time I tried to go to Reddit on Internet Explorer, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. For some reason, in 2014, Microsoft still can't get a page to render right. I can't believe it. It's astounding to me. I mean, they go so far out of the way to convince you that Internet Explorer works well. And under normal, stupid, simple use, the mobile imager website, which is the primary host of Reddit, it is one of the, it is like top four image host sites in the world. And it doesn't display pictures right. Like, how is that possible? How can you guys miss a website? I feel like you should be able to go through the top 100 websites and say, or like the top 200, 300 websites, and you should like actively go and make sure each one renders right. And if they don't, fix it. Like, this is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's entirely insane. I mean, it's one thing to not have a good ecosystem of apps, okay? You know what? Whatever. You don't have Dropbox. That drives me crazy, but I'll survive. It's got a good Fitbit app. That's cool. Instagram looks like Instagram on everything else. Facebook works. You know, like sort of your big important apps work just fine. It's cool. Won't deal with it. You know, like some of your, your basic names, Sudoku, it works. Okay, that's cool. Whatever. Some of my, you know, but honestly, Google, and I love Google, has completely scorned Microsoft. They do not want to give them a leg up. Not even kind of. Like, there's Google search and nothing else. There's no Google Maps. There's no, so you're stuck with the Nokia Maps program, which, by the way, now has its default with a speed limit alert. So if you're going a couple miles over the speed limit, yeah, it'll alert you, which is just like, you gotta be kidding
me. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, right? Exactly. You could turn it off, and I did while I was driving, which, you know, I'm sure they were thrilled about. But it's just, you know, there's just little things. Their Bluetooth management is not very good. Their audio management. Oh my gosh. I just don't get it. Okay. I'm listening to my iPhone. I got my earbuds in and I'm playing music. It's cool. I jump into my car. I'm still playing music. I turn on my car. My radio kicks on. Bluetooth starts looking for a Bluetooth device. Finds my iPhone. My iPhone automatically turns volume audio from my headphones to the car phone. It handles everything. Everything works beautifully. I never set any of that up. I never mess with it. Like, the only time I ever have to do anything is when I accidentally mess with something, like I go in airplane mode or something stupid, and then I have to like restart the whole thing. Which is like, okay, that was my fault. I shouldn't have tested it. I'm sorry. But everything else, like under normal circumstances, just handles everything perfectly. Yeah, that's not true with the Microsoft phone. You get into the car, the Bluetooth connects, but it still plays to your headphone. You try to switch over to Bluetooth, doesn't work. It doesn't do it. You got to unplug the headphone jack. You can't just. How is this possible, guys? Like, it's just the phone is beautiful. It's a beautiful piece of hardware. I love the design. I forgot how much of iOS 7 was a complete and unabridged ripoff of Windows Phone 8. And yet Windows Phone 8, I still think, in the end, did a better job because, you know, they didn't want it to be too obvious. You know, just like the whole flat motif and everything, but their animations, their overall design, I think it's a beautiful phone. Apple has totally caught up with the keyboard. One of the things I've trumpeted for a long time was the quality of the keyboard. I can't tell the difference anymore, which means Apple got incrementally better over the last 2 years, which is not shocking. It's now they're on par. They're both fine. But I don't get it, James. I just don't get it. Why as a company would you do that? So this is the question, James. I bought the phone on Thursday, September the 11th, which means that I can hang on to the phone free of extra charge until October the 11th, the 10th, really. I probably will return it on the 9th.
Okay.
How long should I torture myself with this?
You gotta give it at least a couple weeks.
Okay. it's going to be tough, but okay.
You could do it.
Yeah.
Besides, you're trying to get the Moto.
Yeah.
Which I guess technically the way you're buying phones now, you don't have to do them in order anymore.
No, yeah.
Go back to the iPhone for a couple months, and then when the Moto 360 comes out, that's when you can try the Moto X and the 360.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I think, you know, that is the nice part about all this is that, I don't know, it's, I'm going to spend so much money on a phone this year, though. It's unbelievable. Because, for me, I'm getting 128 gig. I use all 64 gigs already. It's you know, it drives me nuts. And the higher quality pictures, the higher quality. But it's funny. I was actually looking at it. So two things I take space on. Honestly, the two biggest uses of my space: recorded video and music. But recorded video, I mean, by far and long. Which I could offload a lot of that, I suppose, free up space. But you know. But it's like, if I want like TV shows and stuff, and like I spend way too much money on iTunes, I want to be able to keep that with me, man. So that's where I'm at. But that means when I get the 5.5 128 gig iPhone with a case and Apple Care Plus, I'm going to drop like well over a G.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm glad I have the money already set aside for that sort of a stupid expenditure, but that's what it's going to cost me in the end. That's a plane ticket to Hong Kong.
That's a lot of money.
Now technically it's going to cost you the same thing or thereabouts, within $100 actually, but
$800 is what we spent.
Was, well, subsidized.
Yeah.
See, but I mean, over the lifetime of the contract of the phone, it'll cost you just as much as it cost me.
Okay. Fair enough.
You know, so it's just I'm just doing it all up front so I can goof off with different phone services and be a lone ranger in the wild west of technology. That's how I justify the cost. Is it costs almost the same. It's just I'm taking Dad's strategy on all of this. I've already used Strategery once this show, so I try to keep it to once a show.
Yeah, except he barely uses any data, and you go the opposite route.
Yeah, well, you know, that was going to cost what it was going to cost anyway. I'm having a hard time. I don't want that big of a phone. I think it'll be. I'm looking forward to the Moto X because it's about the same size, overall dimensions and everything. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't even notice the bigger phone, to be honest, the bigger 4.7 in my pocket. Like, I notice it a little, especially because it's so friggin' thick because of this camera. But, you know, overall dimensions, I don't really notice. So it'll be interesting to see when you get a really wide and tall phone that's pretty thin, how big of an impact that is on my my perceptions. But
cool.
And that was my adventure in retail this week.
Man, that's a crazy adventure. Crazy adventure. All right, we got a couple minutes. You want to do that last one there?
Yeah, this is awesome. This is just so do you know who Deadmau5 is? Deadmau5. He's a techno artist. He'd probably hate being called that. He's a DJ, and he's a musical artist, and in the realm of guys like Skrillex and others, I can't remember the names all of a sudden. But you know, he's a pretty wealthy dude, pretty famous. He's kind of on your cutting edge of technologically driven music. Comes up with some pretty good songs, puts on some pretty cool shows. Wears a big old mouse head, but he happens to own McLaren and decided just for the fun of it to join Uber for a night. And yeah, this is one of those like awesome and yeah, decided to go for it. So I mean how cool would that be, just for fun, jumping into Deadmau5's McLaren.
That's pretty cool.
I love Uber, and I love what it is. I don't necessarily love Uber as a company, but I love what Uber is and what it stands for and what it stands for, like, you know, and as far as markets go and technology and people, you know, and that whole sharing economy. And this is the sort of thing that's just like, it's great. It's so awesome. It's just so, like, I was like, could you imagine, like, you hail a cab and all of a sudden dude pulls up in a McLaren. Like, that alone would be just an astounding experience. And you're like, are you serious? Yeah, come on, get in. And then, like, and then if you have any idea who it is, like, that would just be, you'd lose it. You'd just absolutely lose it.
Yeah.
And it's great. You know, it's funny. It's one of those ones where he's enough of a rabble rouser where I get a feeling that he did this on his own because he thought it would be cool. But man, could you imagine if Uber said, hey, we'll kick you $100,000 if you do this. You know, just it's this big advertising spot. We want everybody to talk about it. You know, you got to do it long enough to get a couple of tweets from the actual users and stuff, and we'll make sure that it hits all the big blogs and everything. We'll take care of that end of it. That's an interesting part of the world of apps that I'm learning about right now, is the advertising strategies. And I recognize now that there's been a couple of times where that in the past year or two that I've got sucked into an app thinking it was really cool, and in retrospect it was all paid advertising. There were groups of people that were paid to use the app, to promote the app quietly, and it got into, you know, to try to push the app, and it was all, you know, it's a lot of times with apps and social apps, you know, if they launch built and fully functioning, then the entire, that's all they're spending the money that they get from their original VC on, is trying to get a user base going, and you know, use whoever you can. But anyway, no matter what the story is, the fact that, you know, he did that was awesome. It's very cool.
That is cool. It would be interesting to get celebrities to participate and do that. I mean, there's obviously a safety factor there, but that would be pretty sweet. You know, I'm imagining, like, don't ask me why this one pops in my head first, but like, could you imagine like George Clooney?
George Clooney. I was thinking Denzel Washington. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know. Whatever. You know, just someone of that caliber where people are just going nuts.
I love the fact that you and I didn't jump to someone like Emma Stone. We went to like the really awesome like older dude actors. But yeah, it would be great. That would be awesome.
Oh, dude, I'd totally be picked up by Sean Connery. That'd be sweet. Yeah.
Could you imagine jumping in?
I'd be like, hands off that stick shift, man. Right. Don't touch that button.
Right. Could you imagine jumping into a car and having it be like George Clooney or Denzel Washington? What are you doing? So, where are we going? Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx. Yeah. Actually, you know who I really want Jamie Foxx is, because when I was in college, one of the girls that lived down my hall was actually really, really good friends with Jamie Foxx's daughter. Like, she went to school with the Olsen twins, and back like before they were super billionaires. And like, her younger sister actually had like, they know her younger sister and hate her younger sister. Like, that's something. To be known and hated by the Olsen twins, right? That's like, that's worth bragging about your entire life, and all from like, you know, middle school antics. But she was so. Anyways, good friends with Jamie Foxx's daughter, and Jamie Foxx would every once in a while, her parents would ask Jamie, "Hey, do you mind picking up Jessica?" This, "Hey, no problem." So like, pull up in front of the school, roll down the window, "Hey, Jessica, get in the car." And she'd have like, it's like middle schooler running. Jamie Foxx is yelling for her. Like, that is so cool. I want Jamie Foxx to yell at me to get in the car.
Yeah, no, dude, that's a Uber should totally take advantage of that.
I know.
It's so much fun.
Oh, it's a brilliant marketing strategy. It's a brilliant. And I'm like, how much do you have to pay?
Could you imagine? Oh, dude, like Conan O'Brien just picking you up.
Right? Oh, that's, yeah. That, you know, honestly, it was Franco and James Franco's younger brother. He's pretty funny. I can't remember his name all of a sudden. But James Franco's younger brother and Conan O'Brien on going on a Tinder date together was, I don't know if you ever saw that video. It's worth Googling. It is hilarious because they don't go as James Franco and they like make up fake names. And so all of a sudden they show up with a camera crew and it's Conan O'Brien and James Franco, James Franco's younger brother. You're like, what? And they went on a Tinder date. It was a really entertaining. And
it's funny.
And they yeah, but it's yeah. It's a good idea, man. It's a good way to spend your money to get your Q factor up. Why did Beats sell for $3 billion or however much it was?
Yeah.
It's entirely because Dre and Jimmy Iovine are smart enough to pay artists to feature them in, you know, Beats Pills in their music videos and to show up and be like, you know, and pay Colin Kaepernick to wear Beats while he's walking into, you know, the Levi Stadium. You know, that's, you know, it's how the world works, James. And
it's a good idea. Uber.
It is.
Listening.
Yeah. Come on. Listen to the podcast. We're up and comers.
Yeah, dude. Sounds like Deadmau5, whatever his name is. Deadmau5? Is that what you'd call
Deadmau5,
him?
Yeah. If you want to be mean, if somebody doesn't know, you just say it's Deadmau5 is how you pronounce it.
Deadmau5. Yeah. It sounds like he gave them a fantastic tip. Like, dude, here's how you get the word out.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll never find out, but I'd love to find out if Uber had any financial compensation involved in that, because it would not shock me in the least.
Mm. Yeah.
It's cool. Very cool.
That is cool. That is cool. Cool, man. Good show. We're right at time.
Beautiful.
Let's see here. Switch this all over. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it. My name is James Furlow. My Levi-wearing brother. Unfortunately, the outcome was not fantastic tonight, but that's okay.
Yeah, I hate that.
Those Bears. Anyways.
Dub Bears. My
Levi-wearing brother, Matthew Furlow. There we go. And we will talk next time. Thank you.